you might think your house is clean. Like, you wipe the counters, you vacuum the rug, maybe you even lit a nice candle.
Right, the classic Saturday morning routine.
Exactly. But right now, embedded in the paint of your walls and quietly cycling through your air ducts, is the microscopic, jagged history of an animal that might have moved out 6 months ago.
It's a slightly terrifying thought when you put it like that.
It really is. Welcome to this deep dive. Today, our mission is to figure out how to genuinely keep a Canadian home clean when you are living with cats and dogs.
Which is, I mean, it's a totally different ballgame. You can spend your entire Saturday scrubbing only to find pet hair right back on the sofa by Sunday morning.
Oh, without fail.
And the reality is standard cleaning products and, you know, conventional routines simply are not engineered for the biological reality of living with animals.
Yeah, cleaning a pet-free home is like regular maintenance on a car. You wipe things down, you do a little tune-up, it's predictable. Mm-hmm. But cleaning a home with pets is like managing a small, furry biological storm. It's chaotic, it's constantly moving, and it just requires a completely different tool set.
That is the perfect way to describe it, a biological storm.
Okay. Let's unpack this, because the challenges are particularly intense if you are living in the greater Toronto area or really anywhere in Ontario.
Oh, absolutely.
You are dealing with year-round shedding, the absolute nightmare that is wet Ontario spring mud and all that dander trapped indoors during our long sealed-up winters.
Right, because when we seal our homes up against the cold, we trap all of that biological material inside with us.
Yeah, nowhere for it to go.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And the most visible sign of that biological storm is, of course, the fur. I mean, it is the first thing you see on the floor, on your clothes, on your furniture.
Right, the fur. Let's start there. Because, I mean, you might think you were doing a great job vacuuming.
But you probably aren't.
Exactly. If you are just using a standard vacuum head, you are essentially just spinning the fur right back into the air.
Yeah, so a standard vacuum head relies primarily on suction.
Okay.
But pet fur, especially on carpets and upholstery, weaves itself into the fibers. It practically hooks in.
Ugh. Yes, yeah, like tiny little needles.
Right. So when you pass a standard suction head over it, the airflow just agitates the loose fur, sending it airborne while leaving the embedded fur completely untouched.
So you're just making it worse.
Pretty much.
Yeah.
To actually solve the problem, you really need two distinct features. A motorized brush head, and a true HEPA filter.
Let's break those down because, yeah. You know, people see HEPA on boxes all the time, but don't always know what it actually means practically.
Exactly. So a true HEPA filter is a dense mechanical mesh designed to capture particles down to 0.3 microns in size.
Which is tiny.
Incredibly tiny. Without it, your vacuum might suck up the hair, but it will immediately exhaust the microscopic dander and, like, fine fur fragments right back into the room through the vent.
Defeating the whole purpose.
Exactly. And as for the motorized attachment, that physically grabs the fur from the carpet pile and the upholstery fibers, pulling it out rather than just skimming the surface.
Using a standard vacuum head on pet fur is honestly like using a leaf blower indoors.
That's exactly what it is.
You think you're cleaning, but you're just creating a tornado of fur that's going to settle back onto the coffee table in 10 minutes.
And nobody wants that.
Definitely not. And if you have a heavy shedding dog in the GTA, mm-hmm. you should actually be vacuuming every 2 days during the spring and fall shedding seasons just to stop that fur from migrating into every single room.
Because that migration is relentless, fur acts almost like tumbleweeds on hard surfaces.
Oh, yeah. The hallway tumbleweeds. I know them well.
Right. Which is why you want to avoid using a traditional broom on hardwood or tile. Brooms scatter the hair, just like that leaf blower analogy you just used.
So what's the alternative then?
You want an electrostatic dry mop first to attract and hold the hair, followed by a damp microfiber mop for a complete clean.
Okay, that makes sense. But what about couches? Because I've ruined my upholstery trying to scrape fur out with standard lint rollers, and it never works.
No, the stickiness just isn't strong enough.
Exactly. But the sources mention this physics trick here, using just a damp rubber glove.
Oh, this is one of my favorite hacks.
Yeah. You just take a standard dishwashing glove, dampen it slightly with water, and then rub it across the upholstery in one direction. It clumps all the embedded fur together so you can just pick it up by hand.
What's fascinating here is the underlying physics of that trick.
Okay, lay it on me.
So when you drag a slightly damp rubber glove across fabric, you are creating an immense amount of localized friction and static electricity.
Right.
A lint roller only uses surface adhesion-like. It relies on stickiness, which is just weak against fur that has woven its way deep into the threads of a couch.
It just glides right over the stubborn stuff.
Exactly. But the rubber glove creates enough friction to literally pull and roll the fur out of the woven fibers, gathering it into a dense mass.
It completely outsmarts the problem.
It really does. But, you know, fur is just the visible part of the storm.
Yeah, it's what we can see.
Right. The real issue, the thing that makes a house feel unclean anyone walking through the front door, is the invisible problem. The odors.
Oh, the smell. Odors are where standard cleaning routines fail the most spectacularly, I think.
Without a doubt. Pet odors come from surface deposits like saliva, urine, and anal gland secretions, along with airborne particles that settle into your fabrics.
Just the thought of anal gland secretions settling into the fabric of a living room rug it's enough to make you want to throw the whole rug away.
It is definitely not a pleasant thought.
And you cannot just light a candle or spray an air freshener to fix this. Air fresheners completely fail because they just layer synthetic scents over top of the biological waste.
Right, and you end up with a room that smells like a meadow and a wet dog simultaneously.
Which is arguably worse.
Oh, it's much worse. To actually eliminate the odor, you have to engage in basically molecular warfare.
Molecular warfare, I like that.
You need enzymatic cleaners. These are fundamentally different from standard household soaps.
How so?
Well, enzymatic cleaners contain biological enzymes that actually break down the proteins found in pet waste, destroying the odor at a molecular level.
Okay, so if you have an old urine stain on a carpet, you want to saturate the area with an enzymatic cleaner. Brands like Nature's Miracle or Rocco and Roxy are great and widely available in Ontario.
Both excellent choices, yeah.
Wait, so I can't just spray the cleaner and walk away? Why do I need to build a plastic wrap tent over my carpet?
Okay, so this is crucial. You have to think of those enzymes as microscopic living workers.
Living workers, okay.
Yeah, and for them to do their job, literally eating the proteins, causing the smell, they need time and they need moisture. This is called dwell time.
Dwell time, got it.
If you just spray a carpet and walk away, the cleaner evaporates into the dry indoor air long before the enzymes have finished breaking down the proteins.
So they die off before the job is done.
Exactly. So the plastic wrap acts as a barrier, preventing evaporation. It keeps the environment moist so the enzymes can work for several hours.
Okay, that actually makes total sense.
Once they've done their job, you remove the wrap and blot it dry. And it's crucial that you just blot. You do not rub.
Because rubbing pushes it in.
Yes, rubbing can damage the carpet fibers and push any remaining material deeper.
So you're essentially building a microscopic greenhouse to let the enzymes feast.
That is a very vivid but very accurate way to look at it.
Once you realize that enzymes need time and moisture to eat those proteins in the carpet, you start looking at other soft surfaces differently. Which brings us to ground zero for body oil and saliva. The pet bed.
Ooh, the pet bed, the source of so many mysterious smells.
Right. You have to wash them weekly in hot water with unscented detergent and dry them completely. A quick room spray isn't going to touch months of accumulated body oil.
It won't. And that accumulated material brings us to the third major challenge, which is the ultimate embedded particle, dander.
Dander, the silent enemy.
Truly. When we talk about pet odors lingering, it's often because microscopic particles are deeply embedded in the home. And this perfectly explains why pet allergies are so stubbornly difficult to manage.
People often blame pet hair for their sneezes.
Ah, right.
But it's not the hair, it is the dander.
Exactly.
The Lung Association of Canada-lung.ca notes that pet dander is one of the top indoor allergens. And dander is not fur, it's shed skin cells. It is microscopic.
And because it is microscopic, it behaves entirely differently than fur.
How so?
Fur falls to the floor that dander floats.
Oh, great.
Yeah. It stays suspended in the air for long periods, riding on the natural air currents of your home, and eventually settles into every soft surface. Your curtains, your couch, your bedding.
So to fight something that small and that mobile, you need some very specific allergy management tactics.
You really do.
First, changing your furnace and air filters monthly instead of quarterly, and upgrading to a MERV 11 or higher filter.
Yes, and for anyone who hasn't shopped for filters lately, MERV is just the rating scale for how tightly woven the filter is.
Right, and a MERV 11 rating is the specific threshold needed to trap tiny pet allergens without, you know, choking your HVAC system's airflow.
Which is an important balance to strike.
For sure. Second tactic, bathe dogs regularly. Even weekly for high dander breeds, and brush them outside.
Outside being the key word there. Don't do it in the living room.
Definitely not. Third, keep pets entirely out of the bedroom of anyone with allergies, because breathing in dander from your bedding for 8 hours a night is a massive trigger.
It's the worst thing you can do for an allergy sufferer.
And fourth, favor hard floors. Or if you must have carpet, steam clean it every 2 months. But wait, if dander is just skin cells, how on earth is it sticking to the walls for half a year after the dog has moved out?
Okay, so if we connect this to the bigger picture of indoor air quality, it comes down to the physical properties of those skin cells.
They aren't just smooth little flakes.
No, not at all. Pet dander is jagged and asymmetrical at a microscopic level. It has rough edges. Add to that the natural oils produced by a dog or cat's skin, which coat the dander, and you have a particle that is essentially designed to adhere to surfaces.
Like tiny oily Velcro.
Exactly. It sticks to the slight texture of painted drywall. It clings to the inside of your HVAC ductwork. Every time the furnace kicks on, it stirs up those particles again.
That is wild.
This is why, if you are an allergy sufferer moving into a home where a pet previously lived, a standard wipe down just won't do it. You need a professional deep clean and carpet shampooing just to establish a baseline of clean air.
So to fight this heavy biological load, the oils, the jagged dander, the odors, we bring in heavy chemistry.
Naturally.
But this is where we walk into a trap. Mm. We either look closely at the actual chemicals, the liquids, and the sprays we're bringing into our homes, because we might be accidentally harming the very pets we were trying to clean up after.
It is a chemical minefield out there.
Yeah.
The biology of a dog or a cat is fundamentally different from a human's. They groom themselves by licking their paws and their fur, meaning whatever is on your floor is eventually going to be ingested by your pet.
Right. They're literally eating your floor cleaner.
Exactly. Furthermore, their respiratory systems are highly sensitive to aerosols and vapors that we might barely even notice.
The safe versus unsafe list from the sources is pretty eye-opening.
It really is.
We've already established enzymatic cleaners are safe and the absolute best for odors. Then you have baking soda, which is totally safe, and an excellent carpet deodorizer between washes.
And this works because baking soda is amphoteric. It literally neutralizes both acidic and basic odor molecules on contact. It neutralizes the pH rather than just covering the smell.
Which is awesome. And then white vinegar, diluted, is generally safe once it's dry and good for surfaces, though you should avoid using it on natural stone.
Right, it can etch the stone.
But then we get to the danger zone, bleach-based cleaners.
Yeah, bleach is highly effective at cleaning, obviously, but it is incredibly toxic, especially to cats.
Beyond just the danger of them licking a freshly bleached floor, right?
Right. Bleach poses a severe respiratory threat. The off-gassing from sodium hypochlorite irritates the mucous membranes in their lungs much faster than it affects ours.
So you have to keep pets completely away until the area is fully dry and well-ventilated.
Absolutely non-negotiable.
And then there are essential oil sprays. I have to push back on the whole natural cleaning trend here.
Let's do it.
People always assume that because essential oils are quote-unquote natural, they are perfectly safe to spray everywhere. But many are highly toxic to pets. It's wild that a natural tea tree oil spray could be worse for your cat than some harsh synthetic chemicals.
This raises an important question about how we evaluate safety in our homes.
Yeah, we just trust the marketing.
Exactly. We rely heavily on marketing labels like green or all natural. But in nature, many plants produce oils specifically as a defense mechanism. They are naturally occurring toxins designed to deter animals.
Oh, that makes so much sense when you frame it like that.
Right. Cats, in particular, lack a specific liver pathway required to process and metabolize the compounds found in many essential oils.
Really? I had no idea.
Yeah. Tea tree oil, eucalyptus, citrus oils. These can cause severe neurological and hepatic toxicity in felines. What smells like a refreshing, natural spa day to you is, biologically speaking, a poisonous environment for your cat.
It just proves that natural does not mean safe for everyone.
Mm-hmm.
You have to verify everything you use on your floors and furniture.
Always verify.
Okay, so let's say we've dialed in the indoor chemistry.
Okay.
We have our HEPA vacuum. We are using enzymatic cleaners with plastic wrap. We've thrown out the toxic tea tree oil.
Doing great so far.
But none of that indoor perfection matters if your pet keeps tracking the messy outdoors inside.
Mm-hmm.
We need to hold the line at the door, especially when we were talking about Ontario in the spring.
Oh, the Ontario spring mud is legendary.
It is its own season.
It really is. It is a wet, sticky mixture of melting snow, heavy clay soil, and whatever else has been buried under the ice all winter. If you don't intercept it at the threshold, your pet is going to distribute that bacteria-laden mud across every surface you just painstakingly sanitized.
So frustrating. You absolutely need a dedicated paw wiping station at the back or side entry. And it doesn't have to be complicated. Just a shallow tray of warm water, a stack of old towels, and a bottle of PetSafe paw wash kept right by the door. You literally wash their feet before they cross the threshold.
And the mechanics of that station matter, by the way.
What do you mean?
You want warm water, not cold, because warm water rapidly dissolves the hardened clay and mud caught between their toes.
Makes sense.
And you use a shallow tray instead of a deep bucket, because dogs have a natural psychological aversion to plunging their paws blindly into deep water. A shallow tray keeps them calm while you clean.
Here's where it gets really interesting. If you're listening to this and you have a dog with heavy fur, like a golden retriever, a Bernese mountain dog, or a husky, you might be hesitant to take scissors to their paws. But you should trim the fur between their paw pads in the spring to reduce mud retention. Think of the fur between their pads like the mud flaps on a truck. If you don't trim that fur, those paws act like giant sponges, soaking up the entire Ontario spring and wringing it out onto your living room rug.
It is an incredibly effective mechanical intervention.
It's just giving them a little haircut.
Exactly. The fur between the paw pads acts like a wick. It dramatically increases the surface area available to hold on to water and mud. By carefully trimming that fur down, you are removing the physical structure that traps the dirt, making the paw wiping station infinitely more efficient.
That's brilliant.
And once you manage the mud at the door, the general maintenance routine becomes much more manageable.
What does that routine look like for the average listener?
For households in the GTA, you're generally looking at vacuuming twice a week, mopping weekly, and washing bedding every week or two, and a professional deep clean every 2 to 3 months.
Which is noticeably more frequent than the standard 3 to 6 months for pet-free homes.
Definitely. You have to keep up with the biology.
So what does this all mean? If you want to reclaim the cleanliness of your home, you have to upgrade your arsenal. Get a vacuum with a true HEPA filter and a motorized brush head. Use the damp rubber glove trick to generate friction on your sofa. Deploy those enzymatic cleaners and trap them under plastic wrap to give them time to eat the proteins.
Give them that dwell time.
Swap your furnace filters to Mervi 11. Ditch the tea tree oil and set up a tactical warm water paw washing station at your back door.
Ultimately, managing a pet household isn't about just working harder or scrubbing longer. It is about cleaning smarter.
Cleaning smarter.
Once you understand the biology of the fur, the behavior of the enzymes, and the suspension of the dander, you start fighting against the nature of the mess and you start actually removing it.
It's all about mastering that biological storm. And, you know, it brings up one final thought that I just can't shake. We talked earlier about how pet dander, those jagged microscopic skin cells, lingers in air ducts and clings to wall surfaces for up to 6 months after a pet is gone. Think about that the next time you move into a clean new house or a freshly painted apartment.
Oh boy.
You aren't just moving into an empty space. You might be breathing in the microscopic airborne history of animals you've never even met, quietly cycling through the vents every time the furnace kicks on. Between the invisible allergens and the unseen history hiding in the walls, are we ever truly living alone?